Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw. So photography for me, it really is about obviously capturing the moment, which is easy, but often we're so busy and we're trying to do too many things at one time. And taking that photo in the moment, you may see one thing, but then when you look at it after, you see something completely different. So I feel often a photo is more appropriate after you've taken it, like a day or two after, because you look at it and it brings you to a place when you are in a different state of mind and you might see things differently. So I think it's perspective. A photo gives me perspective. In addition to capturing the moment, obviously, if there's a loved one in it, but I'm in the hotel business and photos for me are about things that capture my attention and inspire me. And they may inspire me one way today, but they'll do it differently the next day.
Great. So Bashar Wali, am I saying your name correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Bashar, thank you for joining me on the podcast. You are in Portland, Oregon. I am in Hong Kong. We live in an amazing world that we can connect like this.
Indeed.
So people can see the photograph. It's a podcast with photography, sort of like framed around photography. And those are just ways to kind of open the conversation. And if people want to see the images, they can visit the website or YouTube. Yeah, I there are a few things I know about you. I try not to research my guests beforehand because the idea being that there's a jeopardy of I don't know what I'm going to look at and sure. I don't know where the conversation is going to go. Mm-hmm. So welcome to Shooting It Raw, and nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Happy to be here.
Okay. Okay, so what I have here is, it's a photo of neon words on a black wall. So the neon is bright white. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was shot in black and white or if the neon is actually in white.
Is this one I sent you?
It says, think about things differently.
Oh, yeah. Got it. I'm trying to remember, did I send you this? Or Yes.
Exactly. Okay. So, so what I do is I don't look at the images. So all I do is I get the email. It just
file it away.
Yeah. So here we go. So it's what's cool is it's sort of the sculpted neon, and mm-hmm. it says think, next line about, next line things, and next line it says differently, but differently is upside down.
Yep.
And this is mounted on the wall somewhere, I guess.
Sure.
So why are we starting with this, and what's this all about?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this idea of we humans tend to quickly judge the book by its cover, and we're seeing the harsh reality of what that means, whether it's racism or profiling someone on the way they look or what they're dressed like or what watch they're wearing or what car they're driving. And really the idea behind it, why it captured my attention is with the word being upside down, is don't use the same way everyone thinks or think you should think to think for yourself. Think about it differently. So, you know, we jokingly talk about, again, in my business, the hotel business, when someone walks through the lobby wearing a fancy suit and a tie, these days we're like, that's the guy that has no money, that doesn't have any experience. And the guy that walks in with shorts and t-shirt and flip-flops is the guy that probably has more money and has more experience. So all the notions that we're used to, especially generationally, things are changing so fast. I think you need to shed those and start thinking about things differently than you've been taught to for the last, however, millennia that we humans have existed, because things are definitely changing and they're changing rapidly. So I just loved what it meant and what it stood for. And the idea that the word was upside down was really cleverly done, I thought, to kind of illustrate the point is, you know, not everything that you see is as it appears. Dig deeper, find out more.
Mm-hmm. That speaks to me for sure on my creative side. I mean, unfortunately, there's the two tensions, right? That in our brains, we need shortcuts. Like mm-hmm. we need to take things, we need to jump to assumptions and to just get through our day.
Sure.
But yeah, it's also important to, as you say, to shake things up. Now, I have to ask, is your background a fake background? Are you in a real room with what's around you?
Yes, sir. Real room with what's around me.
Okay, so it's great. Like it says, huge, yeah, an exposed brick wall. Very nice. Yes. It says, practice hospitality. So no vacancy. Now, the reason why I reached out to you was because you're connected to YPO. Mm-hmm. And because of my work with my former client, good friend and mentor, who was in YPO and WPO, and so there's that whole other world that unless you know it exists, it's not really something. Mm-hmm. And there's a kind of what I've seen in meeting the different YPOers and stuff is that there's a mindset and a mentality that really kind of unites you a little bit. And so in your case, like what's your life story? Because you're in hospitality, you're a YPOer, so that means you're overseeing, you're the leader of a sizable organization. So who are you?
I grew up in the Middle East in Syria, and my dad had been to the US and had always dreamt of the American dream. And mm-hmm. got married, had kids, and as each one of us graduated high school, helped us and pushed us to come to the US to sort of realize the dream, and then eventually moved here with the rest of my family. So I've been here for 30 some years, spent more time here than I did there. So although I am emotionally connected, I am really, my American wife says I'm more American than she is often. and got in this business from school, went to school for hospitality, hotel management. And people say, why hotels, why hospitality? And I always refer back to this quote that I think was sort of the moment that really kind of defined why this. There's a quote in the Middle East that goes, when a stranger shows up at your door, feed him for 3 days before you ask him who he is, where he's going to, or where he's from. Because by then he'll either have the strength to answer or you'll be such good friends it won't matter. And really mm-hmm. that's essentially the definition of hospitality. And I feel like it's in my, we humans, I think generally, and you're in a part of the world that really celebrates this idea of hospitality. We are tribal animals. We need each other to survive. We have to be together. And I think in a hotel, in a hospitality construct, this idea of being there to welcome strangers and make them feel safe and comfortable is innate to us. And it's just, it's my DNA. I don't think of it as work. I think of it as it is my job on this planet to make sure when you show up, you're well cared for, you're inspired, you're comfortable, you can do what you need to do, and you feel like you belong. In fact, I've trademarked the quote, the sentence, longing for belonging in hospitality, because I think mm-hmm. we're all looking for a home, for a tribe. And I feel we have a place to play into that. So that's sort of the quick story and how I got into it. But yeah, I'll close by saying my neurotic claim to fame as a hotelier is I travel a lot. And if I'm in New York for 3 nights, I stay in 3 different hotels every single night.
Oh, wow.
And when I go back, I don't repeat. So I stay in different hotels than I
Right,
can.
Right.
My current count in Manhattan is 244.
Oh, wow. Wow, look at you.
I'm pretty sure I hold the record if I cared enough to prove it. I don't, and mm-hmm. work to prove it, as you know. But it's sort of this idea of being a perpetual student and really a student of humanity. It's less about the building and more about the interactions you have with the people in the building.
Inside my head right now are all of these fireworks exploding because, okay, so just so that you know, my client, I worked with him for, I didn't know who he was when I first met him. And then it turns out that he's one of the co-founders of DHL, right? So the you know, DHL.
That small little company, and, yeah. I've heard of it.
Yeah. And so he was one of the co-founders. And for 15 years, we looked at what service is all about, like what is the nature of service. What is and how fundamental it is to being a person, and in your, you know, what you're saying in this idea of the need for belonging, for being part of a tribe and all these things, the connections I'm making, I mean, you basically dedicated your life to really to serving and helping others and to making them feel comfortable. And then to the point of you going to all of these different hotels in Manhattan and consciously saying, I'm going to experience each individual one to learn. So that speaks to again, to the mindset that he had as well, or has in terms of continuous learning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this idea that each time you go into a new place, it's a new habitat, it kind of teaches you something.
Always. And by the way, often it teaches you what not to do. It's not just the what to do, but it's the what not to do. So and I do it globally, by the way. It's not limited to New York. I mean, wherever I go, that's the MO. And it's become sort of my badge of honor and my thing. And to just go back to YPO, to clarify on that for those listeners who don't know, YPO is Young Presidents Organization. And it is basically the idea that at the top, it tends to be very lonely. And CEOs need a place and a community, again, to belong, right? And this community creates a sense of belonging, and it's really a group of peers that offer professional networking, advice, collaboration. There's no secret handshake. There's none of that. but it's a powerful group, 35,000 people globally. And to your comment, there are some incredible people in that organization that you have access to that could be friends and helpers and mentors and all of that. So it has been a great pivotal moment in my time in my life joining it, and I have become very, very active in it. I actually run the hospitality network inside of YPO, all volunteer, obviously. So,
wow, yeah. So, looking at service and what is service in DHL? What is DHL? They don't make anything. It's just just one person meeting another person, and it being the energy between two people.
Right there on service, I'll jump in if you don't mind before.
Please.
My train of thought here. Often people accuse me of being in the service industry, and I call foul on that, and I say, no. I deliver a service. You need a bed and a shower, I give you a bed and a shower, okay? You need to order food, I deliver you food. My dentist delivers a service. Where I get my car fixed, they deliver a service. So yes, hotels do deliver a service, but the actual business we're in is hospitality. And the clear distinction between the two is service is something you deliver. I go to New York, I want an extra towel. A little R2D2 looking robot comes to my room with the towel. Good enough, I've got my towel. Hospitality is how you make people feel. And until, and I'm not saying never, but until we can teach robots how to have empathy and emotional intelligence, feelings are limited to humans, right?
Yep.
And I think if we lose sight of that, that is in fact the business we are all in. DHL is in that business. Sure, I want my package on time. That's a service. You delivered it. But how you make me feel, whether directly or indirectly, is a function of human connections. Interestingly enough, by the way, Airbnb, as you know, one of their key things that they focused on when they launched is right now you go to Marriott, typical hotel room, you go into a website and you go into this big black corporate hole. You don't know anything. You don't know anyone. As far as you know, Debbie who's talking to you is a bot. It is a bot.
It's right. Right.
Airbnb says, the minute you decide to book with us, we're connecting you with the host. Think about the use of the word host. It's warm. It's fuzzy. It's someone welcoming you in. And the first email you get is from the host that says, hi, I'm Debbie. I own this unit. Delighted to have you as my guest. So I think when you think about something as mundane as delivery in the DHL case, when I'm dealing with DHL and I'm receiving a package, I want to feel like I matter. So how you communicate with me and the text you send me and the email you send me that says your package is coming matters, because I'm building a relationship with you beyond just a commodity. Because if you're a commodity, right, then the only way for you to survive, it's a price and a convenience commodity. Like, for example, I buy gasoline. I don't care where I get my gasoline from, my petrol from. I think about convenience in location and price. But if that's what some of these businesses become, then there's no loyalty. I don't care who you are.
Exactly.
I want the service then.
Think about things differently. Look, in your world right now, it's what, 6, 7 in the evening?
No, actually, it's 3:15 p.m.
Right. Okay. So me, it's 7 in the morning, and I love that this is where we are.
Already.
Bashar, this is great. This is great. Okay, let's move on to the next photo.
Let's.
Unless you want to see something else about this image? think about things differently?
I think, again, I'll close by saying we again lose sight of, as advanced as we have become as a species, we still have what's programmed inside of us that doesn't go away no matter what happens. It's always mm-hmm. there. And I think we tend to neglect what's inside. And again, we want to focus on what's at the outside, right? And right. by doing that, we lose so much. I think Rumi, the poet Rumi, that's between what is said, what is not said and lost, and whatever, something like that. So much is lost between what is said and what is not said. So you've got mm-hmm. to be deeper. You can't just rely. When you take that photo and you look at it the first time, you see something, look at it again, and you're going to see something different.
Oh, this is great. Okay. So
it's been a while. I don't remember. So I'm thinking about this differently with you.
It's great.
I didn't look at him since I sent him.
Nice. Well, this one, you call it Hormuz, and mm-hmm. it's basically an arid, the top of a hillside. And it looks like either it's beach or it's the top of a hillside. Okay. And it's because there's sand, like the bottom third of the photo is like kind of sandy, and then the top half is sky, and then below that it could be ocean or a lake. Yeah. And then what makes the photo is it's morning light, I assume it's morning light, and there are these really beautiful rounded, could be tents or it could be like sculpted homes. I mean, they kind of look like a whole bunch of little colorful, I mean, some are blue, green, red, yellow. There are probably about 100 of them just kind of packed in together. It could be really weird looking campground. What's this?
So just for the record, this is not my photo. This is a photo of a photo, just so we're clear.
Okay.
Sure. Hormuz is a village in Iran on an island. Mm-hmm. That is on the sea, so it's on the Persian Gulf. And it is new, not old. It seems like it's an old village, but it's new. Some architect decided to do it. And I loved what this photo means so much. Beyond that, it's colorful and unique, and it looks... I guess the reference I would give it is if you're looking at the Smurfs village, that's what it would look like, mm-hmm. except they're not all blue.
Yeah, very playful.
They're all different colors. And what I love about that photo and what it means, again, is I think of it back to what I said earlier about us humans being tribal, and we are all densely packed together because we need to be together. We have to be together to survive. And what's beautiful and harmonious about that photo is the idea behind it is whether you're tall or short, fat or skinny, black or white, Asian or American, it doesn't matter. We can all coexist beautifully, and those colors all work beautifully together against the background mm-hmm. backdrop of nature and this planet that we have, against the ocean, against the sand. So it speaks to the sense of community, and it speaks to the sense of humans coming together regardless of what they look like and being mm-hmm. as one, operating as one species again, so essentially trying to survive together and lead a good life together. So I just love the emotions invoke when I look at it, particularly in the divided world that we live in today.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it's a bucket list place for a traveler, right? Like tell me you don't want to go there right now. Like it's so wanderlust inducing. It creates this like I want to go and walk between those places and walk inside of them. It's spectacular.
It reminds me of a lower, more compact, colorful, that I can imagine walking through those spaces a bit like, have you been to Cappadocia in Turkey?
Exactly, same idea, yeah.
You know, with all the sort of the houses kind of dug into the tuft or whatever.
Yep.
So that's interesting, like... I can't believe that this is what we're talking about. This is hilarious. Hilarious. This is great.
How many espressos have you had, by the way? I want to make sure you're awake for this.
I know. I've had my two espressos. I'm good. Okay, but perfect. It's more that of all the things that could draw you into something, right? Mm-hmm. You get, so did you land in Portland or did you land somewhere else in the U.S.?
New England, Boston, then Southern California, then been here for 20 years. But I tell people, right. The biggest wife fight I have with my wife is she wants roots. I want wings. I am constantly, mm-hmm. I mean, I travel. I went to 17 countries last year. I never stop. I've been to every state. So it's constantly sort of being drawn and being wanting to explore the world and see what's out there. So, yeah.
That's really fascinating. So they're different. Yeah, going back to the work I did with Poe, because I did it for 15 years and basically wrote books together and all this stuff. So this notion of service habitats, right? So here's this habitat. I'm looking at this photograph, which is spectacular. It's just stunning. And yet, these could be dwellings to live in, but there's no other kind of building. Like, yep. You don't see a store. You don't see an industrial anything. Like, it's just, it's these really, it looks almost like in a children's book drawing.
Exactly.
And it really gives a sense of community, you know, I guess, or
without saying a word, right? Like, you just sort of look at it and it invokes joy, right? Because it's colorful, it's on the sea.
Yeah.
But again, if you judge a book by its cover, you think it's a playground. You dig deeper and you say, well, what is the meaning? It's kind of like art, as you know, you go walk into a museum, mm-hmm. people will look at one piece of art and have 100 different interpretations to what they saw. So I think, again, of this idea of us being together, to me, is it's art. Humans living together, interacting together is a form of art in and by itself.
Okay, so why don't you talk to me about the villages you've built? Like, what are your habitats that you, because you talk about hospitality, mm-hmm. but hospitality occurs in a building or in a habitat or in a kind of space. So how does this kind of manifest in your head in terms of what you design?
So hospitality occurs in a feeling, not in a building. And my argument to you is, if you were blindfolded and you walked into a place, you should feel the warmth of its hospitality. You don't need to see it, you should feel it. And I think it's energy. And hotels have lost their way, because what they want to do is they want to give you that energy with artifacts. They want to throw things at you, art and music and scent and all those things are important. But I argue that I'll give you a good analogy. People say, what business are you in, to me? And I say, I'm in the theater business. And I say, let me explain. I could go to New York, buy the best piece of real estate on Times Square, spend $2 billion building the most spectacular theater you've ever seen in your life, dripping with gold and platinum and crystal, have a mediocre story and mediocre actors. No one cares. You don't go to the theater to admire the building. A beautiful building is accretive to the theater experience, but you don't go mm-hmm. to the theater to admire the building. And an empty theater building sure is pretty for a minute or two or three or five, and then you're like, okay, I saw it. What next? I can go 10 blocks off of Times Square, find a good enough building, safe, warm, convenient, spend all my energy and money on writing an incredible story, hiring, mm-hmm. training, and retaining amazing actors, building a set that's accretive to telling my story, whether said set needs to be made out of gold and platinum or garbage cans. It doesn't matter, as long as it's creative to the story. And the world will be lined around the corner talking about this amazing play. So for hotels, we've come to think more about the building and care more about the building and forget about the story and the actors. When at the end of the day, we humans thrive on storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. And when you come into a place, especially a place that you know, you spend $100, $1,000 on a hotel, you take nothing home with you. Maybe you steal a couple of towels, but that's the extent of it. So how do I create value for you? How do I make you feel there's value? I've got to push that button in you that makes something special happen. I want you to go home, mm-hmm. tell your spouse, your partner, your friend, your family about this great place you stayed at because they did something thoughtful and intentional. And storytelling is a term that's been overused a lot lately. But having been purposeful, intentional, and thoughtful in what you do, I think inevitably ends up telling a story. But the story is, look, I went to this place. Sure, it was great. The room's comfortable. The mattress is great. The Wi-Fi worked. But they made me feel really good because they remembered my birthday. They gave me the whatever.
Right.
There are so many ways. Do you know Maslow's hierarchy of need, right? Maslow is the scientist.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we'll talk about Maslow in a second, for sure.
Yeah. So again, that's really ultimately what I'm solving for. So the way I've built community is really, and forget buildings, anyone can build, there are so many amazing architects and designers out there that can build you a beautiful building. I'm not in the building business. I am in the people business. And what I built is community. I built culture and community through my teammates, right? My people that then help bring others into their community, the guests, and make them feel like they belong. Again, longing for belonging.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to the work I did with Poe, he also spoke a lot, or we also, in fact.
I need to meet him, by the way. Where does he live? Is he in Hong Kong?
Hong Kong, yeah.
There you go. I'll come see him. We'll have a lot to talk about.
So one of the things that we commented on in terms of what was happening with a rapid expansion of mainland China, which I'm sure you've maybe witnessed yourself, is it's a lot of really great hardware, but not the right software. Exactly. Because what's missing is the mentality of what you're saying of hospitality, right? So they have these great buildings, but sure. Then you go inside and it's like, what's your experience?
It's cold. It's emotionless. Again, like, you know, people talk about galleries. If you go to an art gallery, you want the art gallery to be cold because you don't want it to compete with the art. Your focus is the art.
Right.
But when you walk into a hotel, like, it has to be warm and welcoming and it almost like mm-hmm. gives you a hug as you walk in. And again, that only happens with people.
Right. Listen, yes. Yes and yes and yes. I love it. Okay, wait a second. I don't even know the name of your hotel. Do you have a chain? Do you have a chain or what's your?
They're all different individuals. Okay. Not a chain, yeah.
Got it. Hard left. Look at that. Okay.
What do we got? No idea.
It's an X-ray of a Jeep with a person driving.
Okay.
So it's a great image. So it's,
which, by the way, is right there if you could see the bottom of it behind me.
Oh, okay. So you're pointing behind you. So yeah. What's great is behind, just above your head, framing your head is Practice Hospitality. Yeah. And then it says No Vacancy right above it. And above that is this photo. Yeah, so it's the field is all black, and because it's an X-ray, it could be an illustration, but it could be a photograph. It's essentially of a Jeep with the X-ray kind of showing the different sort of facets. Inside, there's a human at the wheel. All you see is a skeleton, and then there's a dog. I think this is an illustration more than a proper X-ray because the dog, you don't actually see the skeleton. What you see is the tissue of the dog that wouldn't come up in an X-ray. That's fine. And then there are two surfboards on top of the Jeep. Why?
Okay. So first of all, you're wrong on a lot of fronts. So this is a spectacular British artist. Nick Vasey is his name, Vasey. And this is what he does is he takes these objects and X-rays them, right?
Wow. So
this is, and then it's art. He sells these photographs as art. And
for sure.
First of all, it's a Land Rover Defender, which if anyone who follows me on Instagram will know I am obsessed. I own a 1975 Land Rover Defender 110 diesel clunky that looks exactly like that one. So obsessed with them. Not the new ones. Forget the new ones. They don't work. But the original ones work really well. Again, similarly looking for meaning. So I first see this. I'm like, okay, this is great. I love it. I'm a Land Rover, fan. Mm-hmm. Great, great piece of art. But then you look at it again and you're like, you know what? This is so amazing and fascinating. So I now use this in my email signature. And what I write underneath it is that we are all the same underneath. You don't know what kind of dog is in that car. You don't know what kind of car it is unless you know because the shape tells you. And particularly the person that's driving it, right? Like, who is that person? Are they rich? Are they
poor? A kid.
Are they black? Are they white? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, but sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
So the genesis behind it is that we are all the same underneath. Doesn't matter what your bank account says, what your skin color is, what your college degree or not is. In that moment, we are literally all exactly the same underneath. And again, I love the deep meaning behind it. Doesn't hurt that it's an object of desire of mine, the car at least. And you could sort of see yourself in this, you know, Land Rover going to the beach with the surfboards, with your son who you're teaching to surf, and you have your dog in the back with you. So it just, again, it invokes so many emotions. But really, the deep one in this is this idea that, you know, don't, again, back to about, look at things differently. Don't look at the outline of the car. Think deeper about who's behind those facades, the skin of the car, the skin of the dog, the skin of the person. I didn't mean to get so philosophical on you so early in the morning, by the way.
No, no, this is great. No, this is this is my cup of tea. This is what I like. Okay, so it's kind of like as we experience things, and for example, just of your life, right? Like you're born in Syria. You know, I don't know. Is Syria landlocked, or is there? Does Syria have a coast? I don't remember.
Mediterranean coast, yeah.
So there is part of the Mediterranean, right?
Eastern Mediterranean, so, between Turkey and Lebanon.
So were you close to the sea?
So in the capital city, which is not super close to the sea, but probably if you drove from Damascus to Beirut, it's a couple of hours and you're on the sea.
It's always like, for example, I'm in Hong Kong. I moved to Hong Kong from Montreal, right? Why? Because my wife and I at the time did a strategic planning session for ourselves to say if we could be anywhere and do anything, where do we want to be and do? And, you know, she's from the West Coast, from Vancouver. So you're part of the world now. Mm-hmm. And we looked at the world and we said, well, where can we go? And then after 2 weeks, we decided Hong Kong was the right place to go. And so then we came to Hong Kong. And so with Po, we talked a lot about this idea of the power of pull and what attracts you. And what is it that it's, you know, we make sense of the world by looking backwards. So why did you get drawn to hospitality as a kind of a life work in a way? And then, like, how does that connect to this image of this one particular artist who does these amazing, like, x-rays of these giant things? Can you connect those dots?
So hospitality, by its very nature, relies a lot on beauty. I'll use that term for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're building beautiful spaces. We talked a lot about the art you use and the scent and the lighting and the textures and the carpet and the colors. And then the beauty of the offering, again, in terms of the warmth of the hospitality and all of that. So the way I connect everything in that sphere is that I say I'm drawn to beauty in any form, right? Car, mountain, watch, man, woman, it really doesn't matter. It's not objectified. It's just like the village you saw, that was a beautiful picture, I thought. So it's what inspires me to create beautiful spaces is being a fan of beauty in whatever form it comes in. And beauty, by the way, has nothing to do with perfection. Beauty could be found in the most imperfect thing. You know, if you're you talk about photography, that's a key element in it, I think, is that you can find beauty in anything. So the way I connect all that to the world around me is this idea that beauty inspires, and it inspires you to really think about how you're doing things and how could you make hotels, by their very nature, tend to be aspirational, right? And the idea behind aspirational is you live in a house, it's probably, the design is not as great as you'd find in a hotel. The bed is not as good as a hotel. The art's not as good as a hotel. So when you go to a hotel, you want it to feel aspirational. So you're constantly looking for things to fill these buildings in that create the sense of aspiration for the guests, because then it speaks more to the value proposition. So connecting all those things together, and again, my teen kids complain that I post too much on social media, and I do it for me. It's not monetized or anything. I do it for me because I want to share. I mean, you could find beauty in a quote. You could find beauty in, like I said, anything, and just share it with the world. So that's how I connect it all together. It's we need time to be inspired and creative, and that comes from whatever is read. Some people love reading books. That's how they're inspired. I'm a more visual person. I love to go and collect these objects of beauty from across the board in photographs that help me get inspired and stay innovative and focused on what's important to what matters more.
Right. Okay. So from your experience, so in the same kind of vein, right? When traveling in Sri Lanka, we were staying at this one place and it was kind of mediocre. And then we just went and we stayed at this other place and we're just like, meh, whatever, weren't expecting very much.
Sure.
And it turns out that the guy who ran this little inn that had maybe five rooms actually owned four Michelin-starred restaurants in the UK. So for us, it was this unassuming explosion of experience that just, you know, that stays with you for the rest of your life. Exactly. But here I am talking about it like 15 years later. Sure. So in your travels, when was there that happy discovery where all of a sudden you said, okay, wipe the blackboard clean. This here is something that's other level.
Such a tough question to answer. Again, the answer I normally give is the only time I'm blown away. I'll answer it differently. 244 hotels in Manhattan. People say, what do you remember? What stands out, right? But what stands out? And I say, the only thing I remember is when someone goes out of their way and genuinely, highlight, underline, gives a shit. Like the bar is really low. Back to Maslow for a minute. When someone pushes that button at the very top of Maslow, self-actualization, transcendence, that's when you got me. At the bottom, great, you have great shelter, you have great whatever, okay, it's objects. If you manage to push that button, that's the sort of the moment of truth. And that, in my experience, has only happened when people made me feel like I, the individual, matter. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. I fly on Delta Airlines in the US. I go to the gate. My name is on the screen. I'm on the top of the upgrade list. Sure, I'll take your upgrade. I'll take your upgrade happily. But I don't get excited about it because in my mind, an upgrade is, there's a system that says record number 5679 who traveled this many miles has priority, thus gets the upgrade. I, Bashar, didn't get the upgrade. The record got the upgrade. I go sit on the plane and the flight attendant comes to me mid-flight and hands me a card, a handwritten card that the pilot wrote that says, Dear Mr. Wally, thank you for being a loyal customer. Thank you for keeping us employed and working during the pandemic and for stepping up and traveling. I am king of the world, right?
Yeah.
So you think about those moments. Sure, I've got my upgrade. That's not transcendence. That's not self-actualization. I paid my dues to get my upgrade, right? Nothing's free.
Sure.
I traveled so much.
Yep.
But for someone to recognize me, that's the moment of truth. And I think that's when I see that done well in hotels, that's what I remember, and that's what I try to do in what we do every day. And it's not easy, obviously, right? And remember, we have a transitory industry. People come and go. It's hard to treat people. Generationally, it's changing a lot because people want, you know, everything done electronically. But I still think you can do a lot of those things. You don't have to do it for every single person, but do it for enough people and it becomes your thing. It becomes part of your ethos and what you do. So fundamentally, again, it really is about, and I can't say it enough, I'm a huge fan. If you figure out in your business how to push that transcendence, self-actualization button, that's how you win every time. At the bottom, the service you provide has to be good.
Yeah.
As charming as you are, if your product is garbage relative to the next competitor, it's not going to last long. But if you're selling me a service and you and your competitor have the same quality, the way you're going to win my business is by figuring out how to build a relationship with me and making me believe that you value me enough as a human that you're making me feel that I matter. Right? We talk a lot about
absolutely
teams and teamwork. Of course, teams matter, but at the end of the day, you want to be recognized for your work within the team because team just erases you as a human. You are a person with your individual contribution. Sure, I recognize the team, but I want to recognize you as well.
Right. Yeah. So that notion of and I guess that goes back to the quote that you had said about, you know, have somebody stay with you for 3 days. So you actually get to know them and then, right. Okay.
But the idea that, again, you're not serving strangers. I mean, you know, some people are so friendly. They used to quote like, you know, I've never met a stranger. Like there is no such thing. You mean, because the stranger inevitably becomes not a stranger anymore.
Well, my daughter calls me Mr. Friendly because I'm constantly, So as you can tell.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So do you want to say anything else about the fact that, well, Land Rovers, you're a fan, you know, we're going to have to get them to sponsor the show.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. They won't
the
like
old ones, not the new ones.
I don't like their new ones that much.
You already shit on the new ones.
I love Land Rovers. Again, it's, I think, you know, the form, I love the form. I love the beauty of the form.
Yeah. So. Well, actually, let's follow that for a second. Being in the, okay, so I'm Canadian, right? So yeah. Canada, wide spaces, all this stuff. And so for me, now Hong Kong is the exact sort of opposite, where it's kind of like a very enclosed space. It's very dense. Although sure. where I live is very rural. Mm-hmm. But why don't you talk about, when was the last time you took a road trip?
Define a road trip.
In your Land Rover.
Oh.
Gone out.
I mean, short drives. It's not a comfortable road trip kind of thing. And people say you should be taking her in the mud and in the mountains. And I say, no. She's too precious to get dirty.
Sure.
Listen, I'm a city slicker. I'm an urban rat. You tell me today that you're going to give me an award for being on your show. I can either come to Hong Kong for 2 days, fully paid, or I can go to the Maldives for a week. I'm picking Hong Kong. I am city all the way. So I don't do much road trips. I do airplane trips. I know my carbon footprint is terrible, but yeah, I love flying to new places. Sure, I enjoy driving every once in a while, but mostly flying.
Well, what you need to do is find yourself an X-ray of a jumbo jet. Exactly. That would be mind-blowing.
I take a, you know, G650. that would work. That would work. Doesn't need to be a jumbo jet.
So basically, speaking of art, and in a way, you curate an experience, right, in terms of your hospitality. Mm-hmm. So by asking people to send me 4 images, I'm subconsciously curated a conversation for me.
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, so this is a photo of, or it's an image of it's supposed to look like the back of a book, but it looks like a digital sort of illustration. And it's a quote. The quote is, "If you're not ready to expose your true self in New York, you won't survive here. Love your beautiful imperfections. Be confident and accept others for who they are. Do that and you belong to New York forever." And those words are in yellow on a baby blue sort of field. And okay, so I showed the world that I know how to read. Do you want to read this? Because somehow if it comes out of your mouth, it might be one more.
It's perfect. I don't even have it in front of me, so it's perfect. You did it justice. This is a magazine in New York called Quoted, and this is the cover. Okay. And they do these sort of love letters to New York, and this is one.
Oh, genius. Copy
that I love. And we were just finished talking about being an urban rat. No offense to the world, and I've been to lots of places in the world. I personally believe that New York is the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
The energy around it, the thing that you can't describe about it, mostly energy is how I describe it, truly is one of a kind. And again, London, Shanghai, Hong Kong, Singapore, Tokyo, Cape Town, Sao Paulo, you name it, Buenos Aires, there's truly nothing like it. And I just love the rawness of that quote. And again, it kind of ties back to a lot of the things we're talking about, is this idea of just be your authentic self, expose your perfections and imperfections. And if people aren't ready to accept them, then tough shit. Don't change yourself to force you belonging. Find where you truly belong. And if it takes you a while, it's better to be you and take longer to find your tribe than to try to be someone else and live a life of misery trying to pretend to be someone you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's just that if you know enough about New York, that really describes the New York attitude, essentially, that we don't give a shit. We are who we are. If you like it, great. Mm-hmm. If you don't, we don't care. And I love that.
You can always leave.
Irreverent attitude about New York. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Connect that to practicing hospitality.
It seems counterintuitive, right? But really the simple message that I would pull out of there is be yourself and people will appreciate who you are far more than mm-hmm. trying to be someone else. So you can't be everything to everyone, because to me, again, another overused term, authenticity, I describe authenticity as an unapologetic point of view. So have okay. a point of view, have a point of view. Instead, don't disrespect people. People are entitled to their point of view, but you have yours and you own it. Don't hide from it. Don't pretend that it's you're something else. And I think in how it manifests itself in what we do is that you may not like the place I have to offer you, and that's okay. I don't need every single person to love it. Because if you don't stand for something, you're nothing. And I feel like we have to stand for them. Not political, obviously, not religious, not any of that stuff. But just having a point of view. Like if you want to go do, I don't know, if you want to go do a nautical hotel, go all in on it. Like go do nautical. Mm-hmm. Don't try to say, oh, this person will like it and that person won't like it. Because the minute you start diluting what it is that you believe in, it just becomes, mm-hmm. you see it, right? And it becomes diluted and meaningless.
Right. Okay.
So it's the one word I'd pull out of there for you is authenticity.
Yeah.
Everyone else is taken. Be yourself.
Of course. Of course. So as let's talk about some, this is, this is so great that we're back in this pool. Okay. So given your experience and your, perspective on the world, why don't you talk about what is it to be a leader?
It is cheerleader is the way I describe it, more than a leader. Your job is to, I mean, again, if you believe in this quote, I think it was Howard Schultz from Starbucks or somebody who said, hire people that are smarter than you are and get out of their way. So if you're the smartest guy in the room every day, you're in the wrong room, right? Your job as a leader is to make sure that your people are, here we go, you got it? Back to Maslow. My job is to go around every single day to every single person and push their self-actualization button, making sure they know they matter, making sure their contribution matters. Because if you push that transcendence button for them, that creates loyalty. Because again, at the bottom is you've got to pay them right and you've got to give them the right benefit. And if they've got to work the right hours, check, 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 check. Everybody's doing that now,
particularly
in a tight labor market. How do you go above and beyond and create this idea of loyalty? Simon Sinek, your countryman, I'm sure you're familiar. I love this idea mm-hmm. of making sure people know why they do what they do. Not what, not where, yeah. not how, not when, but why. So this idea of ensuring there's a common thread in the company for people to understand what their mission is and why they do what they do, and then ensuring along the way that you're practicing what you preach. So if I tell you, make sure you connect with the guests and push their transcendence button, I better be doing that for you as well and making sure you realize you count and you matter. And lastly, longing for belonging. Because if I am just here for a paycheck, back to the commodity conversation, if I'm here for a paycheck, mm-hmm. everybody gives me a paycheck, everybody has the same benefits, I will go to the next person who gives me 1 cent more. But if I feel like I belong, it's going to be really hard for me to leave. Really hard. So you create this sort of intrinsic loyalty by being that cheerleader who's walking around and pushing the, like, I almost want to put it on everyone's uniform in the back and go be like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. Self-actualization and transcendence, do it. So, and again, it's lost on people. Sure, there's the technical part of the business, right? Setting the goals and inspect what you expect and make sure you hold people accountable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you can learn that in a book. The other part is so much harder. It's not as easy to learn and it's not usually in a book.
Okay, so what... Is there a moment or experience that really brought that? Because, you know, again, we read about Maslow and it's okay, it's fine. And it's a great sort of framework to sort of help you articulate and share and talk about the importance of this.
Sure.
But can you talk about a time where you kind of physiologically, palpably, totally, really felt, oh, that I get it. That's why it's important.
Well, I'll tell you where I've done it for someone pushing that button.
Sure. So,
this goes back a few years now. There was a big hurricane in Puerto Rico that decimated the island. They lost power for months, no water, big news, terrible. We had a person who worked for us who had big ties to the island, lots of family there, and obviously no contact. You can't go there. You can't fly there. And we felt, again, she belonged. We were her family. It was our duty, because we were capable, to literally send her with a plane full of supplies, move Earth to get permission to fly in, to get to Puerto Rico where no one else could, and go help her family. Oh, that's wow. One example. And again, if you're fortunate to have the means to do that, sure. And you can't do that for every single person, obviously. But that's one big mm-hmm. example of how you can do it. Other small examples are, again, walking up to someone and talking to them like a human and asking them about their family and what matters to them. It's really, really mm-hmm. easy, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I tell people that go to work for big companies, I say, yeah, sure, great, but you're going to be a statistic. Do you want to be a statistic or a person? So if you're able to make someone feel like a person, feel like they matter, I think those are the very small ways of me showing up in the morning and saying, hey, I know you probably haven't had breakfast. Here's, a power bar for you. Like that moment alone, mm-hmm. those are the things that make the difference. It's not necessarily about grand gestures. It doesn't take grand gestures to do that. So it can happen every day in lots of simple ways. I mean, I could tell you 100 stories about how we've manifested that. Sometimes with money, sometimes with effort, sometimes with words. It's not limited to one thing.
Okay. So one of them, just because I've been bouncing between Hong Kong, Canada, and the U.S., as a sort of an implant into the U.S. and a learner and a soaker of the mythology and the story and the potential and all those words. And I'm looking at this quote, you know, if you're not ready to expose your true self in New York, you won't survive here, right? So that authentic self. So how would you describe that access to potential, or ability to self-expression, or the ability to self-actualization within the U.S. versus other places that you've been to? Like, what is, can you name that? Or, I mean,
such a hard question. I mean, access to potential, that first question, I will say, I am a true believer, hard work pays off, but sometimes, often, right time, right place, luck, mm-hmm. say, don't wait for luck, make your own luck. I believe in all of that. But I know very smart people that are exceedingly hardworking, that have been doing it for a long time and just weren't given the break that they deserve or need. So yeah. Access to opportunity, I would say largely is in your hands, but not 100% in your hand. You could be smarter, more hardworking, and just not be given the break that you might need. So anyone who's working hard and is feeling despair that they're not getting there, don't give up, because it takes one moment, one interaction, one person to see your potential, and you'll hit it. But yeah, it's not always guaranteed. Hard work is not always a guarantee to. Sure, you'll mm-hmm. make it, but you're not going to necessarily make it to what you think you should make it, or someone who's worked as hard as you made it. The U.S., I haven't lived anywhere else meaningfully enough to speak intelligently about this. I've visited lots of places quickly, so I can't really speak mm-hmm. to it, but I feel like you look at a lot of the refugees that are crisscrossing the globe, and there's lots of stories of failure, obviously, right? Just because the system is stacked against them. But you look at some incredible stories, people who literally came with the shirt on their back and created yep. something in a country they don't know, a language they don't speak, a culture that's not similar to theirs. So I feel that globally, there's always opportunity. The size of the opportunity, the scale of the opportunity is definitely different. Now, the hardest thing though is, and when I moved to the US, I assimilated very quickly. I think part of the problem, people that travel to other countries to try to get opportunity, is they stay together. And if you're always staying together and thinking the same way and talking the same language, you limit your ability to be
absolutely
out of opportunities. So I'm a strong proponent of assimilation without losing your identity. Don't go change your name to whatever, Sam, and become pretend mm-hmm. that you're not from somewhere else, because that speaks against the idea of being authentic. But yeah, you can't just live in a bubble. Just like, you know, when we're raising kids and they live in a bubble and then they go to the world and they're like completely lost. They don't know what to do because they think the sure. world is what that bubble is, and the world is a completely different place. And I've been, again, a big proponent of taking my kids across the globe with me and making sure they're exposed to the ultra bougie and the very poor and everything in between. It's a big world out there.
Right.
Like, you can't just live in a bubble. Lots of people, sadly, live in a bubble.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've traveled and you've seen it, and yeah, so okay.
Don't travel to discover the world. Travel to discover yourself. One of my favorite quotes.
That's a very good one. How about you say that again?
Say that again?
Yeah, can you say it again so it sits in their heads a bit more?
Don't travel to discover the world. Travel to discover yourself. So when you go, like I said, and you see things you're not used to and you experience things you're not used to, you learn far more about yourself than you do about the place you're visiting.
That's beautiful. Practice hospitality. Bashar, Wally, thank you so much for joining me. This has been really great.
Thank you. Glad you woke up early for this. I hope it was worth your while.
I'm an early riser anyways. It's all good.
By the way, I just started watching the show Expats last night, Amazon.
Okay.
Nicole Kidman, and it's about, you know, these Americans that moved to Hong Kong. You should watch it.
Here's the funny thing. There was this big hubbub about when they were shooting it in Hong Kong and everything.
Yeah.
And Amazon won't let it stream in Hong Kong.
You know how to do the VPN game. It's not that hard.
You're right. Yeah. Okay, look.
All right. Thank you. Nice meeting you. Cheers.
Have a really great weekend.
You as well. Thanks.
Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw. Ooh, baby, I like